if I want to know, like in ABC organization, how the format of your email looks like, or is it abc.com or something, like I can figure out, like, okay, this is the format this organization is using, because I mean on that Google space and the error page, it is leaking that information. So that is from the Google side, and we cannot do anything.
Just on that one, when you say Google, so they have this as a default.
Yeah, it's a default page.
You can't change
error
it.
Page. No, you can't change it.
What? I mean, so no one has complained to Google about this?
So I came across one blog in which I think the researchers reported that. I mean, the researchers tried the multiple loads, and I'm not sure whether the researchers reported the same or actually, if you look at the Google's perspective,
yeah,
I think they will probably say that this is a functionality because we are telling you the point of contact, because they are looking for the authorized person's perspective probably.
Wait, so it would not be like a, for example, you know how some people may, instead of saying, say for example, his first name, Alice at example. Or whatever is in the name, because Alice was the owner of the application. Can I have it as a group email, or it would always be an individual email?
It depends. It's just Google is asking you for the developers or the owner of that application. I think in my perspective, 99% they are admin's email, because admin is the one who is going to manage all that application. It's like if you have trouble connecting with the application, contact and then email of the owner.
If you are a Google Cloud user, and I don't know if you've used this, there's a service called Google IAP or Identity Aware Proxy. In this episode, we spoke with Anjali Shukla from Not So Secure, and she is a cloud security assessment person. She's training people in cloud security in AWS as well as Google Cloud. So in this episode, we spoke about why is Google Cloud's IAP a service people in security should know about? Also, what are some of the common misconfigurations? By the way, one that surprised me the most was the one where by default, Google would show the email address associated as an owner of the application that is linked to Google IAP, like feature request or whatever you want to call it. That was not the most surprising one for me. And there were many more that we spoke about, especially if you're trying to do an assessment of whether a Google Cloud presence is something that you want to manage yourself because your CSPM doesn't do a good coverage of Google Cloud, then this is the episode for you on how you can start doing cloud assessments of your Google Cloud environment. Also, if you know someone who's probably trying to understand how they can do SSH to application OAuth connection to an application without the hassle of building a jump box, whether you even need a jump box anymore or a VPN, then this is the episode for them as well, especially if they're working at Google Cloud. So this is a continuation of our Google Cloud Security Month, and Anjali Shukla was kind of have to share all these things about Google IAP and what are some of the common low-hanging fruits that you can look at if you're trying to do a Google Cloud security assessment of your organization's Google Cloud presence, no matter how large or small. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, I appreciate you sharing this episode with a colleague who may be working on a similar problem in Google Cloud or just trying to learn about Google Cloud security. So thank you so much for that. And if you're here for the second or third time, feel free to drop us a follow or subscribe to your favorite audio or video platform like YouTube, Spotify, Apple. We're basically everywhere. So if you're following us on social media, I'm super grateful. Thank you so much. Recently, we ranked top 50 in the UK chart, which has been amazing. Thank you so much for all the support. To be listed in top 50 on an Apple podcast rating for technology podcast above an Apple MacBook podcast has been an amazing feeling. And thank you so much for making this happen. Thank you so much for everyone who's dropped us a review last week. And thank you for people who spread the positive word of what we're creating over here. I hope you enjoyed this episode and get value from this on this Google Cloud Security Month. I will talk to you in the next episode of our Google Cloud Security Month, because we have a few more to go before we end this month. And I will talk to you in the next episode. See ya. Peace.
When you're developing an app, security might be treated as an afterthought. With functionality requirements and tight deadlines, it's easy to accidentally write vulnerable code or use a vulnerable dependency. But Sneak can help you secure your code in real time, so you don't need to slow down to build securely. Develop fast, stay secure. Good developer. Sneak.
Welcome to another episode of Cloud Security Podcast. Today's topic is about continuing the Google Cloud Security Month, and we're talking about Google Cloud IAP. If you're wondering what IAP is, I have no idea. I'm trying to figure out this myself, and hopefully the person who we have with us will be able to help us out with it. So let me welcome the guest on. Hi, Anjali. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Hi, Ashish. Thank you so much.
No problem. And for people who don't know who you are, could you just share a bit more about yourself and what do you do and where you are at the moment in terms of how you got into your career?
Okay. So first of all, thank you so much for having me here. I really like this amazing cloud security podcast, and I've been following many Google, especially the Google Cloud podcasts, and I really liked it. About me. So first of all, hello, everyone. I am Anjali Shukla and I am Senior Security Consultant, and I'm more into the cloud security and the DevSecOps. I started with the DevOps though, and then later switched to the DevSecOps and the cloud security because I like the security sides of it more. And finding into the misconfiguration and then securing it and looking from the side of an attacker, like what are the misconfigurations possible and how we can create a secure infrastructure. So this is my little introduction and that's it. Thank you.
Awesome. So the first one, what is IAP? What is GCP IAP?
Okay. So IAP is like, so the full form is the Identity Aware Proxy. And IAP is a Google managed service. So let me give you an example. Suppose you have a web application and it is currently into the testing mode. Now you want your QA team to access that web application, not other of the teams. So what you can do, you can use this service for authentication and authorization. And your IAP will take care of both of these processes. And you don't have to provide any VPN, or you do not have to put that app behind the VPN or any firewall, or you do not have to whitelist any IP. You can just simply use that service. What IAP will do, it will do the authentication first and then the authorization. So now your app is secure. You don't have to take care of any other complexities and you can just focus on your app. So it's a simple, like in a layman or in a common terms, it's just a Google managed service and it is allowing you to do the authentication and authorization both so that you can at least focus on your application. You do not have to worry about anything else like the VPNs or any other complexity, like how to give access to other users or even how to give access to the external users, even if it is not QA of your team or the employees that belongs to your organization, how to provide them. So for that, you just need a simple setup. Basically, you just need your application and an IAM role or a group if you have a multiple user. It's just a click enable and disable mode. You can just click to enable it and we will be enabled. And that's it.
I remember the first time we spoke about this as well, and you mentioned that, oh, actually, just to enable IAP, it's just a toggle that you turn on, turn off, and you kind of have that. But for a service that is that powerful, which is basically, it gives you authentication authorization capability for applications. Well, actually, before I go on to my next question, some of our audience is probably aware of other cloud providers like AWS and Azure and other ones. For someone coming from another cloud provider, or maybe coming from on-premise as well, how was this normally done in a traditional environment and why is IAP so important?
So traditionally, if I remember, like the organization used to focus upon the perimeter security. They used to put a firewall, like if the big organization is there, the bigger firewall and the complex rule, or they're using a VPNs. So main focus was on the perimeter security. So it was like everything that is like all the traffic that is coming from outside is untrusted. And within that perimeter, within the VPN or within that firewall, everything is secured. So traditionally, this was a concept that I've come across. But now this has shifted towards the zero trust architecture. So everyone and every organization is adopting their zero trust architecture. And IAP is based on that. So let me first tell you what zero trust model or the architecture tells you. So it says that every traffic, whether it is internal or coming from the external, is untrusted. So all the things like user's identity, session token, everything will be checked then and there. And only then that user will be allowed to access the application. So this is the main idea behind the zero trust model, is that don't trust any traffic, whether it is an internal or whether it is an external. IAP is a one good option for that because IAP works on the same model. First of all, it does the authentication. So if you are signed in or you're not signed, it will ask in the authentication, it uses the OAuth 2.0. And then in the authorization stage, it will check that whether you have permission to access that application. So IAP is giving a helping hand in such scenario. Also, if you have specifically mentioned the traditionally what we used to follow. So also, if I take an example of other services like a Jenkins. So Jenkins is like generally we give access to the developers just to run some pipeline because, or if it isn't triggered one, they can go to the console and check that whether their pipeline is triggered or not. Generally, we don't give much permission. Jenkins is set up by the DevSecOps team. So generally, it's put behind the VPN. Jenkins is put generally behind the VPN.
Yep.
Now, in that case, you can use a IAP, web-based service. You can create a Jenkins service. You can keep that behind the IAP because IAP is serving your purpose and you do not require an extra structure for that. Also, it gives you the facility for the SSH jobs. Like IAP improved many complexity, both in terms of the web as well as in the SSH.
Oh, okay. And I think maybe one more element which I would like to cover, and I think that's a great question from Jared here, which is, does IAP support identity federation with something like Azure AD?
Yeah, so IAP is not linked to that. It's just like it is a service that acts between your user and your application. Now, identity federation is like it comes under your IAM group, how you're managing access management, how you're managing that. If, for example, you have a group of user, so for example, an IAM group, let me take a small example, like the basic one. For example, so generally in organization, we do have an IAM groups because we have many users. So instead of giving them individual access or separate access, we create a group and then we put, if you want to give any permission, we attach that permission to that group. It is the case with the IAP also. So there are two different permissions. For the web, there is a permission called the IAP web app service. And I don't know the role name correctly, but it starts with the web. And for the SSH, they have a SSH permission. So you can attach that permission to any identity. It can be your IAM group, it can be your IAM user or any workload.
Oh, I guess a federation question may be also what Jared is trying to ask is, would it have to be still a username password or can it use my existing username password as an employee? I think that's where it's coming from.
It depends on the OAuth you have configured.
Right, okay. So oh, because you can use OAuth.
So you can club the IAP. Plus, there is another service called Identity Platform in the GCP. So in that, you have multiple options. So it can be a Google, it can be a GitHub. So it is just based on your OAuth, like in what way you have configured that.
Right, okay. So the answer to Jared's question is yes, but it depends on how the application has been configured. Awesome. So we spoke about how it was done traditionally, and we also spoke about the fact that traditionally Jenkins, for example, had a VPN in front of it, but now you can actually have something like a IAP, especially if Jenkins is hosted on Google Cloud. In terms of implementation, you said it's just toggle on and off. And the first time I heard about this, where I got confused was, you know how you said web and then you have the SSH option. In my mind, I'm going, oh, that's Jumpbox. Like, you know, traditionally people would have a lot of jump boxes as well. So are we saying if we were to use this service and for people who are in the Google Cloud environment, probably already using jump box, you don't need a jump box if you're using IAP?
No.
You don't need it. So the SSH option is the jump box option, which is basically web is for someone to do OAuth directly to an application. And the SSH box is your replacement for a jump box. Just basically turn that on.
Yeah,
and you'll be able to log into it.
Jumpbox is like, what is the main purpose of Jumpbox? We create a Jumpbox so that all the users can land up onto that server and can connect to the internal virtual machine or internal server, or if it is a database service or a virtual machine. So what IAP gives you this facility that you can directly connect to the private network from your local system or from like wherever you have configured your G Cloud or from the cloud shell. So there is a range CIDR block for the IAP that is controlled by the Google. So the flow is like, I want to access a VM that is in my internal network.
Yeah.
So what I'll try to access, I'll do the SSH from my local where I have configured the G Cloud. Like we run the AWS configure. Similarly, we configure the G Cloud CLI in our local. So my traffic will go from there. My traffic will go to the IAP server. And because in the firewall, so firewall is similar to the security group in the AWS. So in that virtual machines that is into the private network, I'll configure a rule that the traffic should be come from the internal ranges of the IAP. So now firewall protected because it is internal and the traffic is coming from the IAP's range. So for example, my user, I'll use, so there is a flag like -- IAP SSH. I'll run the SSH, the traffic will go to the IAP servers, authentication server, and from there it will go to the my private VM. So it removes the need of the bastion server.
This is interesting because I think the perspective that you're trying to cover in this episode is to bring the, I guess, one, the pentester view of looking at something like a service, because if you know how to break it, you probably also would realize how to kind of protect it as well. But before we go into it, I've got another question from Divyanshu around how IAP is different from AWS Cognita. It's going to be my question, but great question, Divyanshu.
So generally, people have find similarities between the IAPs and AWS Cognito. So for those who are not aware with the AWS Cognito, is AWS Cognito is a service you generally use for the sign-in or sign-up functionality. So there you have option either you want to give, either users can register on your application or you only give them the credentials or you only register. As an admin, I am going to register those users and they can just simply log into the application and access the AWS services. In Cognito also, there are two. I'm going to focus on the one in which user can access the AWS services. Users logged into the application and then you're accessing the services. Now it is looking similar because in IAP also, we are doing the almost same. We are logging via domain. We are following the process of OAuth, means we are signing in, and then we're accessing the application. But we don't have this feature, like whether users can register or not, how many users can register, or whether they should register with the email or the phone number. This kind of functionality AWS provides at identity platform in GCP. It also serves the same purpose. So if you want to compare, identity platform is exactly same as AWS Cognito, because right. there we have so many functionalities. IAP is almost similar, but we don't have such functionality because it's more like access management,
yeah.
like how we are controlling the traffic that is coming to our private application or the internal application that we want to expose, but via some OAuth or some authentication process.
Okay. I think that's an interesting differentiation also, because if there is already a comparative service between Cognito and the identity platform on GCP side, one difference with all that you said was an obvious one for me, where the whole SSH access is not a thing in Cognito. It's just like you don't use Cognito for SSH access, which is really interesting. So that the GCP has decided to create a whole new service as an attachment to their identity platform. And maybe another service to compare this to, actually, I don't know if you can compare this to SSM. I was not thinking of System Manager, but maybe you can't. That's probably different. Okay.
Yeah, they have mentioned it, but IAP is different from the AWS SSM.
Yeah, I think so as well. Probably unique service from that perspective. I don't think Azure has something like this. But the point being, now that we've kind of at least explained to the folks over here listening and watching that what IAP is, let's talk about how does one break. What are some of the misconfigurations that you've seen that people often make mistakes of in IAP?
First of all, not the misconfiguration I will talk about. Misconfigurations are generally we are configuring a service or an application, and at that time we made that misconfiguration. But there is some misconfiguration, or it is from the Google side. I have an application. If you don't map it with some other domain, so generally it's by default URL is what your load balancers or your app engines is, depends on your application. So for example, my domain name is abc.example.com. And as soon as I click that, first of all, it will ask, it will look for the authentication. You are already logged in with the Gmail or the account. It will redirect you for the authorization process next.
Okay, yeah.
If not, so I'll take an example of an unauthorization user. Being an unauthorization user, let's say Ellis is an unauthorization user and she tried to access the abc.example.com. So as soon as she logged in with her Gmail account and she's an unauthorized user, an error page will come. It will reveal or it will leak the email ID of the owner of that application. So whenever you configure an IAP, you have to configure a consent screen. That is for OAuth. You generally give the specifications like what will be the name of that application or who will be the support user or the admin user. Basically, the point of contact if the application doesn't work and if the application, like users are facing some access issues. So that error page leaks that whatever email ID, the admin's email ID you will give while configuring it, it will leak that onto the error page. So if I want to know in ABC organization how the format of your email looks like, or is it abc.com or something like that, I can figure out like, okay, this is the format this organization is using, because it is leaking that on that Google page, at the error page, it is leaking that information. So that is from the Google side and we cannot do anything. But yeah, on the user side, if you're
just on that one, when you say Google, so they have this as a default.
Yeah, it's a default page.
You can't change
error
it.
Page. No, you can't change it.
What? I mean, so no one has complained to Google about this?
I think I came across one blog in which I think the researchers reported that.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure, this is the one, because the researchers tried the multiple payloads. And I'm not sure whether the researchers reported the same. Actually, if you look at the Google's perspective,
yeah.
I think they will probably say that this is a functionality because we are telling you the point of contact, because they are looking for the authorized person's perspective, probably.
Wait, so it would not be like for example, you know how some people may, instead of saying, say, for example, his first name, alice@example.com or whatever is in the name, because Alice was the owner of the application, can I have it as a group email, or it would always be an individual email?
It depends whatever email you will. It's just a Google is asking you for the developers or the owner of that application. In my perspective, 99% they are admin's email, because admin is the one who is going to manage all that application.
Yeah.
It's like if you have trouble connecting with the application, contact and then email of the owner.
Oh, wow. Please send your phishing email to this email address. That's convenient. I imagine it allows you to put whatever email. So I would hope people listening or watching this would actually put like a group email or like a spam email, because they would know there are other ways to go around this as well. But that's a good one. I didn't want to stop you with your misconfiguration, but I just want to make sure people kind of understand that, wait, there's something that probably is a functionality from Google. And yeah, I don't even know how people would check it apart from going to every application, trying to hit an error page and see if it's revealing or leaking any information, which is probably not required. Cool. All right. Over to the misconfiguration. What are some of the misconfiguration people should look out for?
So when we deploy our application on App Engine, so App Engine is a platform as a service. It's like a plastic beanstalk in AWS. So whenever you create or deploy your application onto that, it creates a domain name for you. And it is a predefined syntax, you can say. It starts with the project ID dot the region name dot rappspot.com. It's kind of a pen tester's point of view. If I'm attacking and somehow I got the project ID, and I also, like, while doing enumeration, if I got to know the project ID and the region name, I can create that domain name and I can try to hit it, that domain, just for a validation. If App Engine or if any service or if any app is configured onto that or not. If it is behind the IAP again, then it is good. And if it is not, then the attacker can easily access the application because it's a predefined format of that domain name. Also, the other misconfigurations are, so earlier in Google, it says that, for example, I have deployed an application on the Compute Engine and I have to create a load balancer for that because IAP works on the load balancers and the App Engine's domain.
Okay.
It requires that. So I've deployed an application on the Compute Engine. I created a load balancer for that and I enabled IAP onto that load balancer. Okay, everything is working fine because I deployed my application, attached a load balancer and put my application behind the IAP. But if your Compute Engine's firewall rules are misconfigured, or if that VM is publicly accessible wherever your application is running, then it will bypass the IAP because IAP is looking on the domain side. It is not checking the public IP. It is only taking care of the domain name.
Oh.
It's like two linked service. One is the domain name and one is the IP. Both are attached with the same IP. But I think 2 days back only, when I was trying to replicate the scenario, IAP was not allowing me to do the same. It was saying that first configure your firewall rules, disable a CDN, and then enable IAP. So I think from the Google side, they have put some restrictions on it and they are taking care of this misconfiguration.
That's good to know. But otherwise before 2 days ago, this is actually a thing.
Yeah, it was thing. Even they have mentioned in the document also, but when I was trying to do the same, I got this error. I thought of better sharing it that Google is also taking care of.
Wow, wait, Google is always listening, Anjali. Have you been talking on Google chat about this? They're always probably listening. So, okay, cool. But that's a good one though, because I would have thought, it's funny, on one end, we started off by talking about something which is a default by Google Cloud, which exposes an email. But on the flip side, they're also doing the right thing by making sure the virtual machines are protected by default. Okay, that definitely gives me a better angle. Now, from a application perspective as well, the application itself would still require some kind of a security protection kind of a thing, right? Like, so just because you have IAP does not mean your security vulnerabilities on the application are covered. Is that right? Because still allow for, I don't know, an XSS or SQL injection or anything else, that those are still out in the open on the internet. It's not like they're protected from that as well. So it's not a WAF, to be precise.
Right. It's just an additional layer.
Is there anything which is maintained from a traffic perspective? Because you know how people have API gateways and all of the other things as well, and this is an application, but that only works with load balancers, or do you say it works with the application? What's another scenario which could you consider as a potential scenario for someone to take over or have a hacker misuse the scenario? Where I'm coming from is, you know how there's obviously one scenario that I can think of, obviously, is that if I take over your credentials, then I can directly use IAP to kind of log in. That's probably one obvious one. The other one was the firewall one that you called out, which now Google has blocked out. We also spoke about the email ones. We've already called out three, which are potential places that a pen tester could use. Any other scenarios? I guess fourth one was the application itself having vulnerability. Any other that come to mind? We just called out four.
Yeah, one more is there that I have seen. It was so client's initial intention was that they have deployed an application. And so as it was in testing mode, they have put a wrong rule onto the IAM configuration. And instead of giving individual access, like instead of giving access to the particular IAM group or a user, they have access to the authenticated user because they were like, the application is in the testing mode, we are testing it. So it's like so many people are performing some tests and they are looking for the bugs, like how the application is behaving. So by default, all, they have put it on the authentication mode. Now, later, they forgot to disable it. And it's like all authenticated user means any Google account user.
Google account user, not just the company one.
No. So there are two keywords, like all users and all authenticated user. All user is publicly accessible.
Okay.
You can, it's like no IP, you can say, because you can directly access. All authenticated user, it means you are doing some kind of an authentication. It's like anonymous authentication is okay.
How people share Google Docs on the internet for public, but anyone can access it. For that as well, you still need to be authenticated to Google user to add any comments or do anything. The same way over here, as long as you have a Google account, you can do whatever you want with this.
Yeah. So it's the same case in the AWS as well. AWS also says authenticated user. If it is your organization and I have configured my AWS credentials, I can access your data because the policy is all authenticated user. Authentication should be there. It is not necessary saying that they should belong to my organization. There should be an authentication. Better to like make sure that you are attaching policies correctly and you are taking care of it.
Good point to note as well. Actually, talking about this as well, because when we were talking about this last, you spoke about doing cloud security assessments as well. And for people who are probably coming from a background where they want to do a lot more assessments on their side to identify any more scenarios like these that they would have at their end, what's your thought process usually when you go and try and do like a cloud security assessment of GCP? Are there any low-hanging fruits that you normally go for, or what's your thinking process there?
Before doing any assessment, first of all, I look, like I run a basic scan, and generally I use an open source tool for that. So it can be a crawler, it can be on Cloud Query, it can be a Steam Pipe or any open source tool.
Yeah.
After that, you have to verify or validate that whether the tool is giving you the valid output or not. After doing the basic scan, you can always look for the low-hanging fruit. By saying low-hanging fruit, that if I know the project ID and I know the region. So while doing an assessment, generally I do have a permission to scan the infrastructure or to look into the service. Definitely, I'll have a project ID and I'll have the region. So I'll look for App Engine services running and whether I can be able to access it with or without the Gmail ID or not. And then I look for the storage buckets also, because it's similar to the App Engine's domain name. We have formatted syntax for the cloud storage bucket. So I look into that also.
Right.
And if the application is deployed on the compute engine, then there's another perspective, like if it is having XSS vulnerability or any kind of a vulnerability, or it's kind of an application related check that generally we do take care of that, whether we are able to perform a normal XSRF check. So earlier, I think before 2018 or so, I think, I'm not sure about the year, there was a metadata like SSRF vulnerability in the GCP, but they have removed it.
Yep.
So it was like using this vulnerability, we can access the data of the metadata API. So we just have to request for the metadata API, and from there we can get access to all the data. But they have upgraded this to, so like this vulnerability is resolved from the Google site itself.
Yeah. Okay.
Small check that you can take care of it after performing the basic scan, because that's some additional check. Or there was one more in the Firebase also, like with the help of Google Docs, you can just take care of, you can look into the Firebase if it is misconfigured or not. So it's like service related vulnerabilities that are pretty much common, and then that also you can look into that. Basically keep a note of it, like, okay, these are the information I get and what I can do further with that information.
Right. I guess for people, is there a general length in your mind for if I just have one GCP account with not too many projects? I just say for the case of simplicity, one project, one folder, one Google account. Well, maybe the question is more to the context of like, how do you even start learning about this? I think that's kind of where I'm coming from, because the initial thinking was, oh, what's the length of time required? I don't know. Like, what, it's like asking for the how long is the piece of string. Better question to ask over here is that, how does one start learning about assessing Google Cloud? Because I feel like there's not much information about GCP in general, but then GCP security even more or less, because there's not any people talking about how do you deploy something in Google Cloud. So what was your learning process for that? And how can people who are listening in do some kind of a cloud security assessment of their GCP accounts if they wanted it towards the end of this call?
No, before doing any assessment, first of all, you have to understand the service, like how the service behaves, because it's completely my opinion. I know people can say that we have very good knowledge on the pen testing and we can just refer a few blogs and we can directly pen test the GCP service. If they are like, if they are able to do it, that's really a great stuff that they are doing. But like what generally I follow, I first of all understand the service, how the service is behaving. And then I look into the security sides of it, look more into the misconfigurations of it. And while if you want want to learn about the assessment, you can, like, I always look for the open source tools or the resources, blogs, videos on YouTube, whatever open source available, like whatever, all the resources that are freely available, because I generally follow the same. If you want to learn GCP, you can go into the YouTube or you can refer the videos for the basic understanding. You can opt for any certification course, like the security one if you want to go for that, or the architect one. So in the architect, it's more like the hands-on. You'll be able to get familiar with the services, like how the service is behaving. And then you can go for the security one also. If you want to understand each and every service of the GCP side, like what all security services GCP offers, I think that after having so much of understanding from the GCP, you can take any tool, like as I mentioned, Prowler or the Cloud Query. There are multiple tools. You can just attach, you can create a user for yourself, and you can attach a reviewer role. So GCP offers a reviewer role if you want to perform a security assessment for the environment. And you can just try to run that role and just go through the misconfigurations or rules or whatever output you're getting. Just try to understand, okay, this rule is saying that your IAM role ABC is misconfigured. And then just go back and look into that role, like what misconfiguration that role is having. So that will be easy for the assessment.
Interesting. And thank you for sharing that, by the way. But from a technical perspective, that's most of the questions that I had. But I also have three fun questions for you towards the end. The three questions are super simple. The first one being, what do you spend most time on when you're not working on doing cloud security on Google Cloud?
It's like apart from work.
Yeah, it can be about work or apart from work as well, yes. So you're actually always working.
No. I don't. So I like to read books and I generally go out for a walk, or I like to travel and read books.
Travel and read books. That's a good habit to have. What is something that you're proud of but that is not on your social media?
Okay.
People only say family, some friends and whatever, but like what is something that you're proud of that is not on social media?
Okay. I like to read Hindi books more, and that is not social media.
Oh, right. So you actually read, you're reading more Hindi books, and that's something, because obviously I'm assuming you did not used to read Hindi books and now you do.
Yeah. Earlier, I prefer English one more, but recently I started interest in the Hindi writers, basically.
Hindi literature. Pretty awesome. Cool. Definitely something to be proud of. Third question and the final one. What is your favorite cuisine or restaurant that you can share?
Okay, I don't have one, because
you have a lot of cuisines you love.
I have a lot of cuisines. I like to try new foods. So I like Chinese, I like South Indian, and I like normal North Indian foods also. It's like multiple things I like.
That's pretty awesome. I love how you said normal North Indian food as well. But that was kind of most of the questions that I had. Thank you so much for sharing those. And where can people find you on the internet if they have more questions about Google IAP and how to do purple teaming pen testing or just doing security assessments of Google Cloud? Where can they find you on the internet?
Sure, I'll be happy to answer. And I'll get to know more about the IAP if they are using it to their organizations.
And so, and what would be a good platform for people should reach out to you on LinkedIn, Twitter? Where should they reach out to you?
I am available on LinkedIn and Twitter, so any platform will work.
I will drop a link for that and I'll let you continue the conversation. But thank you so much for coming on the show, and thank you for everyone else who tuned in, and Jared and Divyanshu asked a question as well, and others who asked a question. Thank you so much for your time, and we will see you in the next episode of Google Cloud Security. But for now, thank you, Anjali. And thank you, everyone else. We'll see you in the next episode.